Hey, welcome back to Success Made to Last. I'm Rick Tocchini. This show is sponsored by Play Audio, along with Heather Barnes Media. We've got a great guest on today, Gatsby Frimpong, former Austinite, and he's now out at Stanford University working on some great projects, and in particular, Gatsby TV, the tech company that's created an app offering a fun way to discover television shows and movies. Gatsby, welcome to Success Made to Last.
Hey, thanks for having me on the show.
Good to have you on. Give us your background, other than we understand you lived here in Austin and now you're in California trying to adjust to the culture. Tell us the rest of your story.
Yeah, no problem at all. So from a professional perspective, I actually spent most of my career working as an engineer at Cisco, Microsoft, Apple, and Google. And so I got a lot of technical experience there. I also worked as a product manager right before I left Google. So that gave me experience sort of learning how to build products and then launch products and then essentially analyze the success or unsuccess or lack of success for some products, which is also really cool and a rite of passage there. And then after that, I actually started a master's program at Stanford in design. It's actually with a concentration in mechanical engineering. And so building prototypes, building products. And I'm also a master's student at University of California, Berkeley in data science there. So doing a lot of different things. But for the most part, if I were to summarize my career and the things I've done, it's mostly been in technology, learning about technology, and then trying to get technology into people's hands.
Fantastic. Along the way, you must have had some great mentors that have inspired you to build things and or to analyze what doesn't work. Tell me about some of your favorite mentors.
Yeah, so I have a mentor back from my days at Cisco. His name is Wayne. And one of the things that he said to me that really stuck with me is that don't deal with the world the way that you want it to be. Deal with it the way that it is. Because I think at the time when we were having the meeting, I was doing a lot of complaining about something. And for some reason, that really resonated with me because it really allowed me to sort of think through how I approach the world and how I plan on impacting the world, which is to impact it in a way in which I am cognizant of what's going on today and can say like, okay, well, given what's going on today, this is how I can create a better future based on all of the restrictions I have today, but then also trying to do something that removes those restrictions tomorrow.
Man, here is to Wayne at Cisco. What a wise person. I love that. Is there another mentor that you would like to celebrate today?
Yeah, I think when I think about mentors, another one would probably actually be my mother. I think that a lot of people, you know, you talk about mentors, you talk about professional things. You know, no matter who you are, generally the closest people to you or your best or biggest mentors are going to be a mother, a father, a grandparent, someone probably in close proximity to you. And I think one thing with my mother that really resonated with me is that she was actually an immigrant to America. So kind of watching that experience of, you know, someone who's coming to a new country, pretty uncomfortable, not familiar with the culture. And right now I'm culturally American. I'm 100% American, loving America, all those things. But it was interesting to sort of watch her navigate the cultural side of things, right? Because there's just certain things that you learn in school. But cultural things are things you don't learn in school. You have to pick it up in the real world. And America has a very particular culture. But I think one thing that she instilled in me and one thing that she really helped me with is to understand no matter what situation you are, whether it be comfortable or uncomfortable, as long as you work hard, you treat people well, and, you know, you're really invested in making the place that you're at better, everyone will do the same to you, right? They'll treat you kind, they'll treat you well. So she was really big for me. And then I think it also sort of actually helped me in terms of being more empathetic to a lot of different situations that people are in who aren't me. So whether it be, you know, a woman or someone who's from like a low income background or something like that, you know, being in tech, it's different. I live a very different life, right? In tech, I've been making quite a bit of money. And sometimes I think about things that used to be so out of reach for me that are so simple now. And one of the things that I'll sort of wrap up with is, I think, you know, when my mother first came to the U.S., she had such a hard time paying my $1.50. That's how much school lunches cost in the Washington, D.C. area where I grew up. And she had a hard time paying that. You know, we're now, you know, I don't even think twice to spend a lot more on a meal. And so I think the last thing that she really taught me was the value of money and that. So, yeah.
Well, here's to Mom. What great lessons she taught you. And we zoom forward to Gatsby TV. And it sounds like it's one of the planets that is orbiting around your very busy life where you're getting master's degrees and working at Stanford, et cetera. And I want you to address this kind of broad question of what universal problem have you identified that people are experiencing with streaming platforms?
Yeah. So what's interesting to me is at the time when I first started the app, I was working and basically in my regular job, I was at Google. What was going on there is I was learning about various technologies, building various technologies, all those things in order to solve other people's problems. And so we would go to some of our patrons and, you know, tell them about how we're solving a problem with this product or that product, whatever it may be. And what I found to be interesting is every day after work, you know, I'd get home and I'd be sitting down with my partner. And there's always sort of this time that I feel like almost every family has where it's after dinner, but before bed, and you're all sitting there kind of thinking, what do we want to watch? You want to kind of wind down, relax a little bit. And what was interesting to me about that time is we would sit down and we'd say, okay, let's watch something on Netflix or HBO Max or Hulu, whatever it may be. And we spend a lot of time basically going back and forth about what we wanted to watch. And eventually, for the most part, what would happen is we would just turn on, she really loved Friends in the Office. So we would watch that like, you know, constantly. So I think actually this was sort of born from my boredom with watching the same show all the time. And then also trying to save my relationship from a contentious conversation every night. So I, you know, sort of sat down and said, wow, I'm spending all this time trying to solve other people's problems. And I have my own problem that technology could possibly solve. Why don't I sit down and try to solve it? So this is how essentially this whole thing got born. And I thought to myself, wow, there's got to be, you know, millions of people who have the same problem of not being able to find TV shows and movies to watch fairly quickly.
Yeah. Isn't that interesting? Sometimes we don't even see the end of our own nose. I mean, the problems are right in front of us.
Yep, 100%, 100%.
So tell us about the app and how does it actually save time?
Yeah, so essentially the thing that I started thinking about when I wanted to solve this problem was the fact that for the most part, one thing that's interesting about TVs and movies, there's actually 500,000 TV shows and movies in the English-speaking world. So, you know, with that being said, if you watched a TV show or movie your entire life, you wouldn't even get through 5% of all, like if you watched a TV show or movie every day for your entire life, you wouldn't even get through 5% of the library of TV shows and movies that we have. And so what was interesting to me about TVs and movies is that it is the type of thing where you don't realize whether it is bad. You don't realize whether what you've consumed is bad until you're done consuming it, right? So you don't realize a movie is bad till the credits roll and you're like, wow, I'm really not satisfied. Which, and you think to yourself, oh, I've lost maybe an hour or two of my life. And that really, really bothered me because time, you know, as they say, is money. And for me, time is finite. For everyone, time is finite. So I want to spend it as efficiently as possible. So I said, wow, there's got to be a way where essentially you never watch a bad movie or TV show the rest of your life, right? Because when you think about all the various streaming platforms you have, Amazon, Hulu, Netflix, HBO Max, Amazon Prime, you name it, there's so many options that it's not a problem of not enough diversity or not enough options. It's just how do we get those options to the right person at the right time at the right place? And so essentially, I started thinking to myself, well, how is it that people generally find TV shows and movies? And what's actually missing in the process today is the fact that when I'm generally at a water cooler or at brunch or, you know, in the hallways in school, what I tend to hear or what tends to happen in conversation is, you know, how are you doing, et cetera. But I swear it happens 30 to 50% of the time. Someone says, oh, I'm watching X on TV or Y on Z platform. And to me, I'm like, that's how people find TV shows and movies. It's a social thing that's happening offline where people are talking about things. And the problem that we're running to online is when we sit down after dinner, but before bedtime, those recommendations people have told us about, we often forget, right? It's not there front and center. And so the whole idea of the app is to bring those recommendations to a digital platform so that the next time you sit down, it's right there and you're like, oh yeah, X told me about this show. Let's go ahead and watch it and it'll be totally new to you.
Yeah, I can personally relate to that because conversation with my millennial daughters always includes, what are you watching either tonight or this weekend? And that's how we were introduced to The Marvelous Miss Maisel and then Ted Lasso.
Yeah.
And then the list goes on and on. And it's driven us to the point of, we don't need Spectrum cable anymore because they don't have it. And everything that they recommend in terms of outstanding programming, and one of them happens to be a filmmaker in LA. So we really listen to her. It means, hey, everything on usual TV doesn't make the cut anymore. So you are absolutely correct. It's the conversations that are going on behind the scenes that are driving viewership.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, 100%. And I think that the thing that what sort of differentiates us from your Amazon, your Hulu, your HBO Max, all those things that exist today is a few things. Is one, what we have today is we have a search platform that spans all of the various streaming video on demand platforms. And that's something that I really felt was missing, strangely enough, is that, right? Where I can go in and I can search and say, on this specific device, maybe I'm on a plane on my iPad. For some reason, I'm not signed into everything. So I say, okay, on this specific device, I have Amazon on it. I have Hulu. I have Netflix. I'm looking for something on those three platforms that's a comedy, and it's also rated A, and it's a movie, not a TV show. And then it'll show me everything within that meets that criteria, right? Because again, just to sort of touch on this universal search problem, I think the thing that people don't realize about search, whether it be Google, Bing, anything you're using really, is that these things are opinionated. So if you, there are actually a few solutions out there, kind of Apple TV kind of does this, where you can go in and you can do a universal search. But let's say at any given moment, Apple is having some sort of issue with one of their competitors, whether it be Netflix at the time or Hulu at the time or Amazon in particular, right? Because they're both big tech companies and they generally don't like each other. Then when you search for something, it'll give you results. But one thing that people don't realize is sometimes they omit results because of other external things that are going on in the business world. And so people aren't getting actually true and objective search results. They're actually being pushed in a certain way to watch certain things. And if you think about how capitalism works, what Apple is always trying to do at some point in time is to get you to buy something from the App Store. Right. So they're always trying to feature all of the Apple TV shows or, you know, buy this or rent this from us, et cetera. And then that kind of leads me to another point, because one of the other things that the app does is it shows you where you can watch any TV show for free via subscription or where you can buy it. Because what I would notice is sometimes when I use these universal search features, I say, okay, it looks like I can rent it on, you know, X platform. And then I'd rent it and then I'd watch it. And then part of this whole not being sad or being disappointed once you've already consumed is I would consume a TV show or movie, and then, you know, maybe a few weeks or a couple of days later, I'll realize, oh man, I actually had it as part of this other subscription already for free. Why did I rent it for $3 or $2.99? So that would be really, really frustrating. So we also make sure to solve that problem for users. So, you know, at any time, we're everywhere the show is available, and we don't give you opinionated results. We just give you objective ones.
Yeah, that's well done. That's the best way to put that. So how do our listeners get engaged today with Gatsby TV?
Yeah, so Gatsby TV right now is available as a mobile app. It's available on Android or iOS. And essentially, all you do is you go ahead, you download it, it'll ask you a few questions. And then when you go into the portal, again, a few simple things. One, you can search across all platforms. And then two, whenever you find a show you like, you can add it to a watch list of something you want to watch later. Or three, you can actually recommend it to a friend. And again, the big part of this is not just a social media platform for the sake of social media, because going back to what you said before, what can happen is your daughter can recommend you a show in the app, right? And then the next time you sit down, you're looking at the app and you say, oh yeah, here are the things I'm watching, or here are the things I plan on watching. Oh yeah, my daughter recommended this. You can go ahead, you can hit the play button. And then what ends up happening is that it launches the show on your phone and you can stream the show to your TV. So this is technology that already exists today. Essentially, you can stream to any TV or smart TV, I should say, in your home. And what's cool about that is then when you watch the show, your daughter will get a notification that says, you know, your father is watching the show. Your father and mother is watching the show. And to me, this is what spurs another conversation, because your daughter is seeing it, and we see it with users all the time. They say, oh, yeah, like, what did you think of that show? And what I'm going to kind of finish off on this specific point, and this is kind of also being a technologist, I think, you know, there's a lot of conversation about AI, machine learning, algorithms, all these things. And what sort of happened along the way is that technology has been less human-centric. Like technology, whether it be, you know, Instagram or some of these other social media platforms, has actually isolated people and kept people from talking to each other. So we're actually doing the opposite. We build a technology that allows people to be more engaged with each other in the real world, where we say, hey, you sent this recommendation. It's around this very social thing, which is watching TV shows and movies. We encourage you to then message someone, or the next time you see someone at the water cooler, say, not only did I recommend you that show, but oh yeah, I see you watched it. Here's another recommendation or something like that. And again, spurred a conversation.
Yeah, that you are building connective tissue with through technology for the first time. And it's like, it's so weird that you say that, because we're watching Lessons in Chemistry because we like Brie Larson and we like the concept of the show. And while we're watching it, we get a text from our film producing daughter who says, I stopped watching it after the second episode. It was boring. Mm-hmm. It's like, well, how does that kind of leave the viewer? You're in the middle of the first one.
Yeah.
So but what it did was it adds context to that. And now, you know, if it's interesting enough to even carry on a conversation about it and spend your breath, you know, or your time. And it's almost as if you are taking time and you're saying, hey, it's a precious commodity. Don't waste it. Let's refine it, the use of your time.
Yep, 100%, 100%. Let's refine the use of your time because it's finite. And then again, let's grow those human connections between each other and use technology as an enabler of those things rather than a disabler. And I think that's one thing as we go forth in the 21st century that technology is going to have to do, which is allow us to be more connected instead of being disconnected with each other. And this is a good example of it, right? Don't let the technology use you. You use the technology. So, yeah.
Very good. I've got to give you a special award today, and it's the Dr. Philippe Boissieu Award. And Dr. Boissieu was the protege of Steve Jobs. Mm-hmm. And he wrote the book Aligning the Dots. And if he were on the show today, he would say, Gatsby, you are delighting customers, and you're listening so well, and you're aligning their needs with technology today. So way to go.
Thank you. Thank you. I really appreciate it. And yeah, I think that more of this kind of human-centric technology hopefully will be more pervasive in the future. Because again, kind of being at a university, it's interesting. I'm a master's student, so I'm a little older than the undergrads. And it's just sort of interesting to see, you know, millennials, but actually Gen Zers, and the way they use technology and how they think about things. And one thing I've actually noticed is, you know, compared to Gen X, compared to boomers especially, it's almost like everything is, you know, and I think this happens with every generation, right? But it's, they're always trying to do the exact opposite of what their parents did or their grandparents did. So they're very much against, you know, working for big corporations and like being very much invested in brands and material things and all those things. And one of the things I've noticed is also they seem to be the ones that are more interested in getting off of social media more than actually older folks. Because mm-hmm. I actually think when you grow up in it and you see it and it's been a part of your social network and a fabric of your life, you actually, via the immersion, understand both its benefits and its detriment to you a lot better. So I actually, to be quite honest, have a lot of hope for Gen Zers in what I've seen so far. And that's what part of the reason why I know technologies like this will be more pervasive. They'll be more used by people because it's the right moment, right technology for the right set of people.
That's right. Okay, Gatsby, let's cut to a commercial and I'll let you take the front end. Tell us about Gatsby TV one more time, how our listeners can get it today.
Yeah. So no problem at all. Essentially, it is available on Android and iOS. As a downloaded app, you just search for Gatsby or Gatsby TV. It will show up as the first or second result. Go ahead and download it. It's a free app. And that's about it.
Very good. We're going to be right back after this quick commercial, and we'll continue our conversation with Gatsby Frimpong of Gatsby TV.
Hello, I'm Heather Barnes, food and product photographer and storyteller behind the lens. Our Austin-based team is all about visual solutions. For your brand, it's essential for your product to be memorable and have stickiness. Our clients like Ghirardelli, Tiff's Treats, and Natamu choose our photography to develop positive associations with their brand. They call our work inspiring because it moves consumers into a relationship with their company. And we can do the same for you. Learn more today at heatherbarnes.com. Focused on you, your story, and your success with memorable photography garnished with love.
And we're back with Gatsby. What an easy name to remember for you F. Scott Fitzgerald fans out there. Gatsby TV. I love that. Okay, so this second half, we're going to ask you some little off-the-wall questions. And even though you are a mechanical engineer, software engineer, I want to know, why are you trusting your gut instincts the older you get?
You know, I think the thing for me as I've sort of aged is, you know, when you're young, I think in some ways, and I don't use the word naive, maybe it's immature, but in a positive way, you realize that you can learn a lot. Right. And especially in technology, we have all these examples of these superstars like Mark Zuckerberg, Steve Jobs, Bill Gates, you name it, that were, you know, dropped out of school and started companies at 20 to 22 years old and became mega rich and all this stuff, which is interesting because those are sort of like the prevailing stories. Right. These young people that know a lot. But what I've come to sort of understand is that experience matters actually quite a bit too, right? And the older you get, the more that you understand that experiencing things in the real world, whether it be interactions with other people or just events that happen, both good and bad to you. And so for me, why I've been able to trust my gut instinct more and more is because I know I have the knowledge, right? I mean, the degrees, let's be quite honest, if you go to Stanford, if you go to Berkeley, you go to these places, people are like, okay, you know, you can learn, you know that you're probably pretty smart, but do you have the experience? And so having the experience to me is like working at all these various companies, getting older, having life lessons, whether it be heartbreaks, whether it be disagreements, whether they be awards, whatever it may be. And over time, I've been able to sort of hone in on, okay, these are the skills that you have. These are the things you do well. These are the things you do poorly. And it's allowed me to trust my gut instinct more and more because of that mixture of both knowledge and experience.
Yeah, very good. We love studying smart collaboration here. And I can tell by how you've shared these stories that you are a collaborator. And I want you to tell our young listeners maybe a story about one of your smartest collaborations that led to a breakthrough moment.
Yeah, no problem at all. So when I was actually, I think, a sophomore or junior in college, I had gone to go climb Mount Kilimanjaro. I was actually telling this story to some undergrads the other day, so it's like quite top of mind to me. And I went and climbed Mount Kilimanjaro. I was on my own. I had a few guides that went up there with me. They spoke English. So to climb the mountain takes about 7 to 9 days, depending on how fast you're going. I think for me, it took about 8. So I'm sitting there on a mountain. I'm talking to them. I'm in Tanzania. And to climb Mount Kilimanjaro at the time, at least, was roughly $2,500 to, let's say, $3,000. Let's use a much simpler number, $3,000. So I'm talking to them and I'm like, oh, you know, these trips are about $3,000. How much are you making off of this, right? Because you're on a mountain with someone that's pretty desolate and isolated. You get to really know people. And so I'm asking, you know, a more personal question, you know, how much you're making? And basically they're like, yeah, we're making like $100. I'm like, $100? Where's the money going to? You know, this is $3,000, right? So to me, I'm like, this is extortion. So basically, I finished climbing the mountain. I came back down and I said to them, you know, if I go back to America, I go ahead and I start a website. I go ahead and I basically act as sales and marketing and get more people here. I think I could probably at least triple your salary, right? We'll look at the margin and see what we could do. And so I ran that business for about a year and a half, 2 years, my last 2 years of college. And I actually helped pay for a majority of my college the last 2 years. I was also student body vice president. So I actually got a stipend from the school and the remainder I still had to pay. I think they paid for about 75%. I went to Coastal Carolina University in Myrtle Beach. I did that. I learned quite a bit, right? Because it was cross-cultural. That was sort of my first foray into a real business, right? Each trip's a couple $1,000s. So we're making quite a bit of money. Also doing the exchange of money from the United States to Africa, dealing with those folks, time changes. Also the other part of it too, if you can think about it from my perspective, I'm like a 19, 20-year-old person. You know, someone calls me a 55, 60-year-old from Texas saying, hey, you know, I want to climb Mount Kilimanjaro. Can you tell me about it? And I'm the expert, right? So that was interesting, sort of being an expert at a really young age and really just putting myself out there and saying, you know, I can go ahead and get the marketing. I can be the subject matter expert. I can put together a website and putting all those things together into a package where the whole is greater than the sum of its parts. So that was, I think, for me, a really, really big confidence boost. And then again, when that 6-year-old flies from Texas to Tanzania, I mean, they're, you know, you're doing something that could potentially, end your, it's mortality is a thing when you're doing something like that. So people are very serious about making sure that things are coordinated. And so there's a lot of collaboration between the client, me, the folks in Africa, picking them up, taking them up the mountain, all those things. And it was a really great experience for me to understand all of those things. So I guess the way that I would sort of summarize sort of like this collaboration effort is that one, it was multicultural, which made it nice. Two, I got to see the perspective of someone who's offering a service to someone. And three, I was able to get a lot of empathy for both sides in understanding, you know, there's one side, they're looking to make a little more money to support their family. And then there's another side where someone is probably already supporting their family because they're able to go on trips like this, but they want to be able to make sure to get back to their family. So that's a big part of it. That was just, I think, all in all, a great experience for me to learn all those things at a very, very young age.
Man, your brain is on fire. It was on fire then, and it's on fire now. The other day, I was talking to a guy, and we got off onto some lofty discussion. I've got to bring you into it because you are so smart and bright. And it seems to me, in our lifetime, we've got a chance to communicate to 8 billion other people. Mm-hmm. And I would love to know just how do you think that we can get there to where we can come together as a world and finally start talking about important things like natural resources and how we treat each other and movements of international kindness? How do you envision that for you and me to connect to 8 billion someday?
Yeah, it's interesting. So I was reading this book most recently called A Good Answer, A Good Ancestor, or Being a Good Ancestor is one of two titles. Really, really good book. And essentially what the book, if I could summarize it in 30 seconds or less, is about thinking about where we are today and what our ancestors had to do, whether they came from Europe, whether they came from Africa, whether they came from Asia or elsewhere, how we got to where we are at today, what we inherited, whether it be good things, whether it be bad things, et cetera, and then really internalizing that and think, we are the ancestors, just like George Washington or Harriet Tubman or whoever it may be, are our ancestors. We are going to be those ancestors for someone else. And so what has to be important to us in our society to make sure, especially in America, that they live as good a life as we live, if not better? And one of the things that this whole book was sort of centering around is just the fact that this climate change thing, and we shouldn't say thing, I mean, climate change itself, is a very, very, very big deal. So I spent some time in Florida, and I have a lot of friends kind of in South Florida, fishermen and whatnot. And, you know, one thing when we talk with these folks is, you know, the fishing isn't as good as it used to be, you know. And whether you're conservative or liberal, there's a lot of people who agree, yes. Something, whether no matter your political affiliation, you know something's going on, right? And with these folks, one thing that I know is interesting about the Gulf Stream right now is that there's actually been conversations about the fact that the Gulfstream, might shut down between 2025, which is just a year and a half from now, or 2095. So if you're a child, if you're born today, it's basically 100% chance that in your lifetime, given the way climate change is now, that essentially the Gulfstream is going to shut down. And so when you think about that, the Gulfstream has a lot of like knock-on effects in terms of fishing is a big one. But the second thing that I was actually talking to someone about is I have a German friend. Basically, the way the Gulfstream works, again, to kind of summarize this as quickly as possible, is that it takes warm water from Africa and the Gulf of Mexico up into Europe. And so that's why all of our hurricanes kind of have this thing where they go from Florida up the East Coast, and then they go over to the east, over to the UK, and turn into rain. And that's why the UK is so rainy. But essentially, then what happens is if the Gulfstream shuts down, if you look at Europe and where it is latitude-wise versus where Canada is latitude-wise, you realize that part of Canada is like a barren Iceland. And then in Europe, it's actually pretty green. And this all has to do with the Gulfstream. And so what ends up happening is if the Gulfstream shuts down, what they're essentially saying is that Europe will turn into a barren, like, glacier. So then you think to yourself, what is the knock-on effect to that? We have a lot of issues right now across the globe with refugees, immigration, all those things. Can you imagine what would happen if we had a European refugee crisis where people from first world countries, Germany, the UK, Norway, Sweden, France, are having to leave because they're like, it's just far too cold. So in order to kind of summarize the point that I'm trying to make here is we've got to sort of figure out in terms of scaling and getting 8 people on board, the sustainability challenge, this climate change challenge today, because it could be as soon as 2025, where we kind of have a 9/11 moment, right? Where I remember that day, you wake up and you see the news and you see that the world has changed forever. There's going to be something out there, whether it be the Gulfstream shutting down or something else it may be that's climate related, that's happening very soon. That's going to be our 9/11 moment. That's irreversible, right? We've been on 20 something years, a couple decades worth of wars because of 9/11 now. Trillions of dollars of US debt, all of these things that are going on. And it's all because of that one event. And I say that, yes, this one event in terms of sustainability, whatever it ends up being with climate change, is going to make it so that all of us 8 billion people look to ourselves and we say, you know, what are we doing with our Earth? And so the last thing I'll sort of leave on this point is I think that one thing with humans right now and always is that we've sort of felt that we were more advanced than we really are. So kind of going back to ancestors, George Washington is probably the most famous patient in the United States to ever go to a hospital. And what they did in order to solve his issue was they gave him leeches. And essentially these leeches bled him to death, and that's why he died, right? And so what I'm saying with that and why I bring that up is because at the time it was the most advanced technology. It seemed to make the most sense to do that, right? But in hindsight, you and I would be like, that's crazy. Why would you leech a patient that is dying? That does the exact opposite. And I think in a lot of ways, that's what we're doing to the Earth is we're putting all this CO2 into the Earth, into the atmosphere, all this trash on the ground, in our waters, et cetera. And we're leeching our own planet and we're dying our own slow death because of it.
That's powerful. Okay, my friend, with what you just said, I'm going to put the responsibility back on our listeners and even on your shoulders to bring us to a quicker epiphany about that.
Yeah, I think in terms of that, it's just really, I think, especially in the United States. So I spent a lot of time in some of these like very liberal Nordic countries, Denmark, Sweden, Norway, et cetera. And they are very much on the sustainability train. Like, you know, in America on a Sunday, like you go, you do your laundry and whatnot. There, they sort their trash, which is interesting. They have like 8 different trash bins. It's somewhat annoying, but I mean, it makes a lot of sense. And they're really big on driving electric cars and city planning. And I think at the end of the day, I say, okay, you know what? You're doing a lot of great things here, but the country of Sweden has as many people as just one U.S. city. It's got as many people as New York City. So from our perspective, I say this type of thing needs to be done, but it needs to be done predominantly in order to make some real impact by those nations that are using the most or have the most people, like China, the United States, India. And I think for us, one of the things that we need to do is we need to start thinking about sustainability first, how do we reuse things, how do we fix things, et cetera, not just one-time things. And then secondly, how do we reorganize our cities? You know, being in Texas and being in Washington, D.C., one thing I've realized is that there's always construction, but traffic never gets any better. So I think at some point we got to sort of rethink cars, roads, how we get to places, and how we do urban planning, so that just in Europe, how you can walk to a grocery store and there'll be three of them within a 3-minute walk. How do we make that for at least 80 to 90% of Americans available for them? I think that would be, that would make a big difference.
Me too. I think it's almost parallel to sometimes America lays its sidewalks too fast and they don't see patterns and then do what's necessary. It's like there's something totally ass backwards about the way we engineer cities. So you're absolutely right. That's another show. I got to have you on another show because you are a great philosopher beyond providing, I think, some great practical advice for the new direction of our 8 billion. Hey, you're a great guest. So will you come back?
Yes, I'll definitely be back. I definitely enjoyed being on the show.
That'd be great. He's Gatsby Frimpong, founder, CEO of Gatsby TV. Tell our listeners one more time how they take the plunge into Gatsby TV today.
Yes, so Gatsby TV is available both on Android and iOS as a free app. So go ahead and type in Gatsby TV into your given search platform on either of those app stores. Download it. It only takes a few seconds. You'll be asked a few questions and you'll be right into the app. And then you can go ahead and you can search for any TV show or movie and see where you can watch it for free via subscription or where you can buy it. And then you can recommend shows to your friend, add things to your watch list, keep track of what your friends are watching. And yeah, that's about it.
That's great. Gatsby, you remind me of one of my favorite platitudes, which is wishing everyone a successful life, but on their way to significance. And that's what I think that's where you are. Thanks again for joining us. And folks, have a great week.
Awesome. Thank you.